Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
Corn spiked to a new contract high this week. Most believe a large percentage of that commodity is now out of the hands of farmers, and USDA is set to release the November crop production report. We'll talk all about these and much more today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with John. I'm going to plant all beans, Bondurant of Bondurant Futures in Memphis, Tennessee. Our panelists today are Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Mark Georgie of Allendale out of Mahomet, Illinois, and Greg Johnson of the Andersons out of Champaign, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question. I'm 70% sold on my corn and, relatively speaking, satisfied. On the other hand, I've more than half of my beans yet to market, and frankly, I don't need any cash at the moment. But I could buy a new pickup to cover the tax burden of a large sale if necessary. Should I make one? And in which commodity? We'll start with you, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services.
Well, you haven't done a very good job. I'm going to scold you that way, and I'm going to give you about a C- on your marketing program. And one of the things that we continue to hear is they call up and say, why do we want to get short? And everybody's bearish, and that's the unfortunate thing we've seen. Our general opinion is that the marketplace is being deluged with a lot of bearish ideas. One of them is very large new crop corn acres, the idea that we might scare away export demand and the feed industry is not very well covered and people aren't very well long and we might price ourselves out of the marketplace. My general impression is if you're that heavily sold, I'd probably stay unsold.
Greg?
Well, I'd say if you're two-thirds sold on corn, half sold on beans, the downside is pretty limited at this point until we see, number one, whether we do get the extra acres. And then number two, they're using some awfully ambitious yields, some of the private guys are, in order to get to that 12-point-something billion production number. Neither one of those is a guarantee, and until we know for sure, I think the downside's pretty limited in corn. So if I had to sell something, I'd make another sale of beans. Not that they can't go higher, too, but there's probably just as much downside as upside on beans at this point.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons, and Mike Georgie is with Allendale.
Well, what you should do and could do, I guess, has always been the question. I don't think you could talk anybody in right now of selling anything because, they're saying beans have to go higher to buy bean acres, and the corn, they're talking 5 million more acres, but that's not even bearish to the market. So I don't think you could talk anybody into selling anything right now.
Corn futures rallied this week in the nearby December to a new contract high at 353.5. Even with that background and what most believe will be earth-shaking demand from the building ethanol industry, it seems impossible that this market has reached these kinds of heights with the third largest corn crop on record that's been put into the bin so far. Corn futures, December contract, a high this week of 353.5. Once again, the low at 320. Settlement price, they're up 9.75. At 342.25. December corn at 349.5, up 11.25. That, of course, for next year. By the way, December corn, the nearby, has rallied more than a dollar since making a contract low on August the 18th. In all your years, what do you make of a dollar rally through the midst of a harvest season and a very large crop?
You know, we have seen bean rallies before of this magnitude. And, of course, we have to go back when the great grain robbery in 1972 to remember some of the highlights of a runaway market like we're seeing. My general impression is that, it to me, it really wasn't that unexpected, but it came a lot quicker than I believed it would. And I think the moral of the story is that this new dynamic industry called energy is here to stay and is going to be part of the overall equation in farming.
On that note, I do have a question about this, and Greg, I'd like you to take this up as well. Given that the Andersons is somewhat of an energy company at this point, and building ethanol plants, and in a working relationship with Marathon, I read this week from one analyst. This came down from the Chicago Board of Trade this afternoon. In fact, that the analyst was thinking that corn prices could go to $4. And that if they did that at $60 a bushel or $60 a barrel oil, an ethanol plant could still break even. So that he was pretty convinced that this kind of marketplace could be sustained over the long run. Are you hearing those kinds of numbers at all, Greg?
Oh, sure. I think that's exactly right. And once an ethanol plant is built, they're not just going to shut down. I mean, they'll work through some, you know, very small margins. And you got to remember, a lot of the ethanol plants that are getting built from grain companies are used to working on very small margins. You know, when you see the kind of margins that these energy companies are working off of, you know, your mouth just kind of waters. So, you know, if the margins go from extremely big to rather small, unless it's a negative number, I think people are going to continue to use corn and produce ethanol.
Well, you know, true. And also we have tools called futures and options and cash grain marketing and grain storage as all major tools to make that happen. I think it is profitable for $4 a bushel corn and $60 crude oil. And you know, the big thing is that we still have to have a pro-government in Washington to help maintain a good working relationship. Because, you know, part of this energy independence is very good for not only Mid-America, but the U.S. in general.
Mike, next Thursday, USDA will release its crop production report. Some early numbers from F.C. Stone pegged the corn at 10.8 billion bushels with an 869 million bushel carryout, if you figure it all out. Informa, 10.7 billion bushels, 790 million bushel carryout there. Both of those are lower numbers than USDA came out with last month, which was at 10.9 billion bushels on crop size. Last year, 11.1 billion, by the way. What's your guess, and how much is riding, do you think, on USDA lowering the corn yield?
Well, I think historically it's a 50-50 chance for them to either raise it or lower it. Allendale's estimate is actually still around that 10-9 area. We just come out with our estimate today. So I think it's still, if you compare it to like 95, 96, we are still not as tight on the stocks as we were then. We got down to a little over 300 million at that point when we got to over $5. So I think it's the money coming in from the energies and the metals that are really holding this market up. And you're still looking at small supply, big demand that is holding this market in and very well could push it higher.
Any other comments on this?
You know, I think the yields that we hear, with maybe the verdict is still out in Iowa, but we're hearing some very drastically reduced yields, you know, east of the Mississippi. And, you know, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio all come in with some drastically lower yields. And in the Informa group, I think 10 bushels to the acre in Illinois. So people have to realize out there that we are looking at some very substantial yield reduction in corn. You know, I think it's just how much of a reduction the USDA will catch on this one. But we're, you know, and possibly if they would actually lower Iowa a bushel or two, you know, it would be a real shock to the marketing system.
One thing to keep in mind, too, is this rally started 2.5 months ago when the concern was not about whether this is a 10-9 or 10-8 crop or 11-0. I mean, the rally is not occurring because of a shorter crop this year. The market was rallying when we were all comfortable with this year's crop. The market started rallying when we were trying to buy acres for next year's crop. So, you know, whether we come up with 10-7, 10-8, 10-9, it is something to talk about. It's something to trade for one day. But I think the bigger picture is we need to grow, you know, enough corn to produce 12 billion bushels of corn next year. And either the price has to get high enough to choke off that demand, or we have to encourage enough acres to get 12 billion bushels. Either way, the price probably needs to go higher yet in corn.
You know, we often talk about the high price of corn at these levels, but I'd like you to step back just a bit from that historical price perspective and bring it down to some more realistic numbers. When farmers talk to you about their per acre income, are they happy or scared that the pre-harvest sales made it to decent price level, bushels per acre, that is, simply won't provide enough actual income to meet their living expenses, the higher fuel prices, and that $200 per bushel cost for seed corn next year?
You know, one of the things that the farmers, I think, are upbeat, but they are also of the opinion that it does cost a lot of money to raise an acre of corn, and we do encourage a lot of conservative ideas as far as major acreage expansion because, you know, it worked pretty well just to be long corn and stay with it and follow the trend up in here and follow some basically gauging with some of the ideas that we talked about the idea that we do have to buy a lot of acres out there. So, you know, I think the farmer realizes that we basically aren't relying on a farm program right now, and it's the marketplace, and we have to be a little better marketers of grain. So there is a lot of excitement out there.
Yeah, we've had an LDP. We've been below loan rate 8 out of the last 9 years. So, you know, we're kind of used to these sub $2 prices in the fall. And so farmers, when they had an opportunity to sell corn at $2.40, $2.50 throughout the spring and the summer, took advantage of that. And in hindsight, maybe they did sell a little bit too much, but nobody thought it was going to go this high this fast. I think farmers are adjusting. They know they made the sales. They're going to live with them. They've still got a third of their crop left to sell, and they're going to try to get as much as they can to average those prices up. And then they're going to be very reluctant sellers and not make those same mistakes next year.
I think that's right. I think the excitement that the farmer's feeling right now is that he is able to sell next year's crop for over $3, and that's what he's excited about. He knows that if he can sell $3 corn next year, produce 200 bushel of corn, and he can produce $600 an acre income, he's excited.
You know what? We better ask that question. Would you make sales for next year? Anybody?
Well, I think there's a lot of producers that are making sales. I mean, they're not selling the farm, that's for sure, but they are definitely looking at it and putting prices in and starting their sales.
One thing that has been brought to our attention, people that have crop insurance are guaranteed the a minimum of the February average price. If prices hang in here throughout February, which they very well could, we're looking at $3.50 December futures. If they've got an 85% policy, they're guaranteed $3 corn. So, you know, if you think it might go to $4 or $5 with a weather hiccup, and if everything goes well and we go below $3, your insurance kicks in, there's really not much incentive to sell corn at this point.
As far as selling new crop corn, I'd do it very conservatively if I had that. I wouldn't go to major extremes. And, you know, the main reason is, you know, the big verdict of just how high this old crop's going to go is still out.
Taking a look at the wheat market for the wheat week, December futures, a high this week at 513.5, their low at 478. December wheat settled at 492.5. They were off 16 cents. July at 469, we're off 2.5. December, it's one other number there, 258.25. We're up 17.75. You know, wheat traded below $5 every day this week. Can we now safely say that it topped at 557 on the 17th of October?
I don't know if we can say that or not. It seems like the funds, you know, will answer that question. You know, a few months ago, the funds were in love with wheat. It was the leader. And now lately, it seems like corn and to some extent beans have been the leader. So if the funds would decide to come back in, we could get back up over $5.
Well, I think right now you're looking at Australia's harvesting, and they're harvesting one of their second lowest crop they've ever had. Argentina's just starting their harvest. So if they cannot supply the needs up until early next year when other people start to harvest, the bottom may not be – or the top may not be here.
The two arguments in the wheat market is, can we really see export demand that hasn't really showed up show up to this market and really push it to a higher level? The other unknown is just how much of the soft red winter wheat didn't get planted in Indiana and Ohio. And the general impression I get when I talk to wheat traders at the major commodity exchanges are that, yes, the exports can come in, and it will be a little later on in the season, and that's still the big unknown to the marketplace.
You know, can the exports really come in? How much can they come in, given the amount of hard red winter wheat we have compared to the soft red winter wheat? Because I don't know that we really export a lot of SRW. Isn't it hard red winter wheat that usually goes out the out our export markets?
Yeah, this is shaping up very similar to about, I want to say, about 10 years ago when basically the hard red winter wheat market in 95, 96 just priced itself out. And there's a lot of countries that would prefer hard red, but there simply wasn't any, so they substituted soft red. And I know as big holders of soft red winter wheat that year, we were able to liquidate a big bunch of our inventory, and the inventories are big again this year, so we're hopeful that the hard red prices itself out and we can get rid of some of this soft.
You might not take a red Cadillac, but you'll take a green one, Todd.
That's probably true. Soy complex now. Bean futures look like this for the week. November's a high of 668, a low at 628.5. They settled 13.5 higher at 649. And next year's NOVs at 697, we're up 17 cents. You know, here's a comment, and I'll just throw it out for what it's worth. South American soybean futures at the Chicago Board of Trade this week settled at $7.10 a bushel. Might that be enough to keep the planters rolling there?
You know, we talked about that in our meeting in Chicago this last week about, the economic situation with the Brazilian farmer. And I asked an international finance person, have they paid their fertilizer bills last year? And he said no. And some people are saying they're going to plant as much beans down there, but without the fertilizer. And we all know that answer to that equation. And then other people saying 2 to 4%. The problem is that there's an enormous debt problem in South America. We are talking about 5.6 million acres reduction from Informa's guest estimate. And at some point in time, we do have to have a soybean price rally. We don't know when, and we really don't know what inputs are going into that South American crop. And we do know that the Chinese continue to buy U.S. origin soybeans very rapidly.
Does anybody know in Brazil itself what is the crop of choice for a farmer? I know in Sao Paulo it's probably soybeans, but does it switch to sugarcane somewhere along the lines, or is for instance here we'd say the crop of choice generally in the Midwest is corn?
You know, I think that verdict is still out because I don't think that it takes more time to put the sugar in the ground and get the crop growing and get the infrastructure going. It's something that just can't be switched like it can in central Illinois from corn to soybeans to wheat and smile about it, because it takes sugar harvesting equipment and everything else. And everything just costs a ton of money to do that.
Yeah, here's my point on that one. The largest number of acres that we planted of corn came in the Great Depression at 100 million acres or thereabouts. And they just tried to plant themselves out of debt at that point. They weren't able to do it, but they tried to plant themselves out of debt. And I'm wondering how that might play out in Brazil when they can't borrow money.
I think Paul made a good point. This rally may have came just about a month too late. Input costs have to be financed, and they have to put lime on those fields to reduce the acidity as well as fertilize. And they were in poor financial straits as of because of last year. So, you know, they were talking about 7 to 10% less acres. This rally probably is going to raise that sum, but I don't think you can get back to unchanged. It might be 3 to 4 to 5% less. So you're still talking about less acres, I think.
Mercantile exchange numbers, we'll go through those very quickly. December live cattle, 88.35, the low at 85.80. And that's the new lead at 85.90. A settlement price down $3.92.5 from last week. November feeders at 101.42.5. We're off 215. Deese lean hogs at 65.85 for the high, the low at 63.75. They settled at 64.17.5 off 42.5 cents. And the pork bellies February contract at 91.45 for the week. We're off 57.5 cents.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Although there was a day or two of mild weather early this week, the month of October ended with another blast of Arctic air sweeping through Illinois and bringing a cold start to November. Temperatures this week average 6 to 10 degrees below normal, with the coldest weather on Thursday and Friday, with lows dropping into the upper teens and low 20s in most areas. Most of Illinois was precipitation-free this week. The exception was southern Illinois, generally south of Interstate 64, which did receive rain on Tuesday and early Wednesday as the cold front moved through the state. October rainfall was near to well above normal across the western two-thirds of Illinois. There continues to be a persistent dry area in Hancock, Adams, and surrounding counties in the far western portion of the state. We should see milder weather here in Illinois next week, but along with that will come some chances for rain. The first chance will be late Monday and on Tuesday as an upper-level disturbance moves through Illinois. The next chance will possibly begin on Thursday as a storm system organizes over the southern plains. This system has the potential, if it develops, to be a big rain producer in Illinois as it moves into the Ohio Valley over the weekend. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to Commodity Week. This is WILL AM 580. Our panelists today are Greg Johnson of the Andersons out of Champaign, Illinois, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, and Mike Georgie of Allendale out of Mahomet, Illinois. Our guest joining us from Memphis, Tennessee, is the president of Bondurant Futures, John Bondurant. He's a speculator and a fund manager who specializes in grain and cotton trades. He's also one of the few fund managers, he says, who uses fundamentals rather than technicals to make his trading decisions, and he farms a pretty large number of acres. Welcome to the program, John. Thanks much.
Oh, it's a joy listening to y'all's comments.
Hey, speaking of those acres, I believe you told us this spring they'd all be in soybeans this year. Was that the case, and if not, why'd you change your mind?
You know, we did have a lot of soybeans. We got a big crop and a big carryover. There's no question about that.
And the other question is, I know you make your planning decisions a lot of times late at the last moment, because we usually talk to you about April the 6th, and that's just about the time you tell us, well, I changed my mind and I went all corn or I went all beans. But can you tell us which direction you're leaning at this point?
Cotton losing lots and lots of acres. We've planted a huge ton of wheat. For instance, I planted no wheat on 8,500 acres of land last year, and I've got 3,300 planted and up, 4,000 acres of cotton. I'm not sure I'm going to end up with any. I've booked about 200,000 bushels of corn so far. This just did it this week when we hit 340, 50, and 60 for September delivery. I just said that's wonderful. I'm booking a lot of corn, and awful lot of that's going on with all the southern irrigated cotton farmers. And we've even seen some cotton land go to full-season beans. Because $7 beans is pretty attractive to some people. But I think the big movement is going to be out of cotton into wheat, which has already happened, and out of cotton into corn. We got 7.5 million acres of cotton in the South.
John, jokingly, with all your success, would you are you going to raise the cash rents that you have to pay to yourself, or are you going to keep everything stable? And then I got a follow-up question.
Well, wasn't a very good farming year because we had a hell of a drought then here and had poorer yields. In general, the South has been wounded farming for the last few years. We have had low prices and not good yields.
You know, John, one of the farming practices we have in central Illinois is this corn-soybean rotation. And, you know, a lot of people are 50-50 or 60% corn, 40% soybeans. Do you have that kind of rotation down there? And are it obviously... You don't follow it, obviously, but what percentage of your pals down there do?
Not very many at all. The only real rotational crop that helps is corn, and we, like this year, had a 20-year low of corn acreage because who could make corn money at corn at under 2.25 when it costs you $400 to do it? So I'm talking irrigated. So not all that much rotation goes on. It's more of a cotton-bean economy, and we have very little corn. We had the lowest amount of wheat planted forever and last year, and we got a huge wheat acreage in the ground this year. But, no, we don't rotate much.
John, you said your wheat acres are going to be up. Your cotton acres are going to be down. Corn acres are going to be up. Yeah. Does that mean soybean acres are going to be down? And what impact did the rust getting up there, albeit late this year. Is that a concern, or is that an influencing factor on anybody's decision for beans? I'm curious as to whether bean acres in the south, in the Delta area, is going to be up, down, or unchanged.
Well, the big corn acreage increase has really come off of full-season beans. And so we're going to have a lot of double-crop beans. We're, you know, wheat at 450 and up is a very attractive crop when we can pretty easily make 70 bushels, and some people are getting up towards 100. So it's really a plant the wheat because that's good, and if you double-crop the beans with some insurance behind it, that's even better. And $7 double-crop beans is very attractive.
John, are guys making cash sales on new crop corn? Are they
absolutely
hedging the idea it's going to go higher?
Making big cash sales. I've talked to some local elevator people, and it's a lot of cash corn being sold simply because of the price. I mean, this week I sold some at $360, and that's a big price. And you can make more money doing that than you can in 1,000, 1,100-pound cotton, and you get rotation, you get the rest of that $300,000 cotton picker.
John, how do you visualize the ethanol industry from your vantage point out of the fray, so to speak, of those people who really, in Illinois, Iowa, the Midwest, Nebraska, Minnesota, are betting a lifetime and a career on it? How do you view it from the South and its ability to burgeon as a real economic force in the United States?
Well, I think it's clearly a big economic force in corn, and I think it's here to stay. I welcome it. I think it's great for us farmers. I mean, Lord knows, we're soaking up a whole lot of corn acres, and we need to do it. And now I guess the real question, and I noticed that no one really talked about that, was how much of the CRP comes loose and what happens to hay acres. Obviously, there's going to be a big decrease in hay acres going into the row crop, and what happens with the 36 million acres in CRP.
John, many of the commodities have actually gone down this year. Some have gone up, but as a fund manager, I'm curious, how often do the investors look at those returns? I mean, if they have a bad month, a bad quarter, do they pull out, or are they in this for the long haul?
They're not in there for the long haul. They come and go. I promise you, if a bad year, you're going to lose a lot of money.
John, what percent of the beans down there do the typical guy still own as far as the old crop? And you are well aware of this 5 to 6, 7 million acre reduction in new crop beans. What kind of a price level are we looking at? And, give us a little bit of your economic thought on soybeans.
Well, I was just playing around with 70 million planted acres, and that probably comes up with a crop close to 3 billion. And this year's usage is 3 billion 8. You're probably going to have a 600 million carryover, assuming the crop gets bigger this week. So what's bullish about that? Nothing. And then we're sending the wrong signal to South America. We're saying, please plant, and they're going to plant more. So I'm not terribly optimistic on beans. I think and the biodiesel side is really, really getting slam dunked. I mean, we're at negative margins now, and everybody's dialing in a huge increase in biodiesel usage, and I think these price with combination of bean oil going up and crude oil going down, a lot of plants that are on the drawing boards will never be built.
And finally, if you could take just a few seconds and address the livestock industry for me, speaking of places that are getting slam dunked.
Well, you can see broiler chick sets have been down 5 out of the last 6 weeks. And apparently their profitability is rather poor, and you hear some odd stories now that the hog producers are having some troubles because everybody was wide open. They all believed that corn would stay at $2. We had a $2 billion carryover, and gosh, wasn't $2 billion awfully huge, which it never was, considering what the offtake is. So now they're hurting, and I presume that you're going to see some cutbacks in animal weights and probably in animal numbers. So that's something to be watchful of.
John, we appreciate you being with us.
Okay, I enjoy it. I love to listen to all your comments.
John Bondurant is with John Bondurant Futures out of Memphis, Tennessee. A final word from our panelist, Paul Cooley.
I think the USDA will lower the Illinois bean crop.
Greg Johnson.
I think options are going to be a more and more important part of people's strategies in the upcoming year.
And Mike Georgie.
I can agree with the option strategies idea, and I think it's going to be a volatile and exciting time.
I'm Todd Gleason. That's Commodity Week.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at AgriGold.com. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.